Hello, I am Eric Schneider. Welcome to this podcast of articles from the Wall Street Journal, a presentation of AIRS LA. You are listening to this recording, which is provided for the use of those who are blind or print impaired. Materials or items read on AIRS LA are the copyrighted property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Today's first article is by Jesse Newman, titled Kraft Heinz to Roll Out Booze Wooing Generation Z. And then Joel Stein has an article, How to Not Pay Your Medical Bills. We'll follow that up with an article titled, Parents Who Hire Elite Tutors Are Setting Up Their Kids for Failure by Kathy Ropey. Then Chris Firework wrote, Why are smart appliances so dumb? And then we'll follow that up with Mike Kerrigan's Life Lessons from Airplane. All these articles are from recent editions of the Wall Street Journal. So let's begin with today's first one, Kraft Heinz to Roll Out Booze, Wooing Generation Z. Kraft Heinz, America's famed ketchup and bologna seller, is hoping you'll buy its vodka seltzers too. The packaged food giant is rolling out its first alcohol product for grocery stores, unveiling a new hard seltzer infused with Crystal Light, a powdered mix traditionally added to water. The vodka refreshers, available initially in lemonade and wild strawberry flavors, will make their debut in select Northeast United States supermarkets this month, with plans for a broader expansion during the year. The vodka drinks come as Kraft Heinz is struggling to market some of its core food brands, including Lunchables, macaroni and cheese, and mayonnaise. The company has reported declining sales for five consecutive quarters and said last month that it plans to increase promotion and possibly change the price of some products to boost sales. Those are things that cannot be done just overnight, said Kraft Heinz chief executive Carlos Abrams Rivera in a recent interview. There's a huge amount of work. Kraft Heinz executive said the new products are part of an effort to modernize the Crystal Light brand, which is more than 40 years old, and reach new, younger customers. Executives said they seized on the idea after realizing that consumers already mix Crystal Light with booze. If you look at some of the social listening reports, you see things like, oh, I keep a cachet of Crystal Light in my purse, and I take it to the bar, said Corey Sexton, a vice president who works on Kraft Heinz hydration business. As the vodka seltzers are low in calories and alcohol content, Kraft Heinz executives said they are a good option for Generation Z and other consumers looking to reduce their alcohol consumption. Last year, Kraft Heinz launched a Crystal Light multi-pack with flavors including watermelon margarita, black mojito, and Mai Tai for consumers crafting their own cocktails. Back in 2021, Kraft Heinz rolled out a limited edition white wine called La Moustarde Vin, infused with its Grey Poupon mustard seeds. In 2023, it teamed up with a sparkling wine company to create a limited edition cocktail made with the taste of its clots and pickles. Kraft Heinz said the new Crystal Light drinks will be made in partnership with Kraft Beer producer Barrel One Collective, which will manufacture and distribute the product. And now, how to not pay your medical bills. As you probably recall, I had a mole removed about a year ago. As fresh as this is in all of our memories, a year is a fair bit of time. So I was surprised to get a bill in the mail for $604.80 from a company called Dermtech. Apparently, much like wedding gifts, you have a year to send someone a medical bill. And like a wedding gift, this bill included a friendly note. Thank you for selecting Dermtech for your healthcare needs. This wasn't exactly true, since before this bill arrived, I had never heard of DermTech. There was no point in my mole removal process where I said, hey doc, if you wind up putting a small sticker on my back to test this mole for basal cell carcinoma, make sure that sticker is from DermTech and not those clowns at Dermacenta or Fuji Rubio. Had this bill been for anything besides healthcare, I would have been far more surprised. A restaurant supply company mailed me an invoice explaining that they had encountered some extra expenses for a burger I ate at a restaurant a year ago, and now I owed them $604.80. I'd be confused, especially if that restaurant didn't have prices on its menu. Luckily, I'd been through this unexpected, unexplained medical bill situation before due to the fact that I'm an American. So I knew that I did not need to review the specifics, such as the $1,485 original charge, which my insurance company had paid, adjusted by $880.20, thereby reducing the cost of the testing sticker to $604.80. I knew that these were completely made up numbers. My high school friend is the vice president of data analytics at a huge hospital. She's assured me that she does not make up numbers. She determines prices using data and analytics and vice presidency. Yet by the time bills go through insurance companies or government agencies and get to patients, they are indeed totally made up. The American healthcare system is not the only marketplace with made-up numbers. There are also Middle Eastern bazaars, used car lots, and Pentagon budgets. And wherever there are made-up numbers, you can bargain. I knew I could do well in a negotiation because DermTech, despite advancing sticker technology more than anyone since the engineers at Scratch and Sniff, is desperate. When you Google DermTech, the first question in the People Also Ask section is, whatever happened to DermTech? The answer Google provides is, DermTech has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection and laid off 20% of its staff. When a company can't make money on $1,485 stickers, there are definitely holes on the business side you can exploit. I also had leverage because I knew that a huge portion of people don't pay their medical bills, causing companies such as DermTech to send these bills to collection agencies for pennies on the dollar. Plus, a 2023 law prevents medical debts of less than $500 from even showing up on your credit reports. I called the number on the bill. I used a friendly voice to tell the friendly woman on the phone that I'd like to pay my bill right now, but I'd like to pay a lot less. I did not tell the woman that the bill was unfair or that I didn't have the money or that a year is a long time to wait to charge someone for a sticker. I simply offered to pay less. She immediately offered me a 20% prompt payment discount, which would reduce my $604.80 bill to $947.84. This seemed like the kind of faulty math that would explain DermTech's Chapter 11 problems. Then the friendly woman typed furiously and discovered that another DermTech bill was coming in a few weeks for about $580. This was for a second sticker I'd also used a year ago, one that was apparently about $24.80 crappier than the first sticker. I told her I'd pay both bills right now for a much bigger discount than 20%. She offered me 50% off. I offered her $200 for both stickers. She said she'd check with the manager and get back to me. I had the feeling I was going to drive out of there with a brand new 1964 Coupe de Ville. She called back and said DermTech would accept $300 for the entire $1,184.80 bill. Was I happy about paying $300 for stickers from a year ago that I never asked for? Extremely, because there's nothing more exciting than getting a great deal. Felt even better than finding out I didn't have skin cancer. couple of weeks later, I called DermTech to tell them I was writing about my experience and wanted to find out if I could have done even better than $300. Warren Clark, the company's chief medical officer, called me right back. He said the new Rena privately owned DermTech couldn't legally talk about the large bankrupt DermTech, even though they had the same staff and used the same stickers. I promised never to talk about old DermTech, even at home with my child. Clark was more upset about my bill than I was, and not because I had screwed him out of $884.80. The billing team doesn't want to take people's money. They want the patient's insurance to pay for it. I'm glad they were willing to work with you so easily, he said. His challenge is that if insurance companies find out DermTech is cutting patients' bills, they'll claim they violated their contract and stop paying them. They'll start to wonder if that sticker is as expensive as they claim. The $1,184.80 wasn't for the stickers, Clark explained. It was for the four lab technicians who spent 2 days removing skin cells from stickers, extracting the RNA, converting it to DNA, amplifying the results by polymerase chain reaction, and going to a therapist about being unable to explain what they do for a living without boring everyone. And the sticker technology was much cheaper, more accurate, and less painful than the usual practice of biopsy. Much like it is easier to use a sticker than to scratch and sniff an actual skunk. The DermTech billing department was indeed empowered to find whatever they can to work with you. But my negotiating technique, Clark said, wasn't perfect. If you had called and were irate, they can sometimes reverse the claim and write it off. If someone is really upset with us, we want to take care of that. Clark suggests that patients save their angry calls for the huge corporations in no danger of filing for Chapter 11, the ones who don't even provide medical services, health insurance companies. I told him that while I was tempted by the prospect of spending 3 hours being transferred around Blue Shield and then ignored, it didn't sound nearly as satisfying as screaming at his billing department. Now that I know all of this, at my checkup next year, I'm going to ask for a whole lot of stickers. And now, Katie Ropey's, parents who hire elite tutors are setting up their kids for failure. At a curriculum night, my son's English teacher told the gathered parents that tutors should not be writing papers for students. Maybe I am naive, but I was a little shocked. This was a Brooklyn school, not a place with billionaires taking private jets to St. Bart's for the weekend. I knew ChatGPT was an issue, which also came up, but this seemed somehow more corrupt and orchestrated. In the midst of the collegial evening, the teacher's comment suddenly illuminated, for a moment, the ugly fact that rich people weren't just buying opportunities for their children, but were brazenly cheating. The practice is hardly uncommon. David Blobaum from the National Test Prep Association told me he was approached by a parent to write a kid's college essay, and he refused. Honestly, these parents should think of themselves as hiring a criminal, not a tutor, he said. I heard about another tutor who did write a college essay for a kid after a certain amount of moral struggle, figuring that if she didn't do it, someone else would. By now, the caricature of rich parents trying to buy a way into the Ivy League for their children is familiar. But some of what I heard was still startling. A tutor at an otherwise legitimate tutoring business told me that the company sends her a ninth grade math homework and I finish it and send it back without ever meeting the kid. Or they send the United States history paper to be written in the next 3 hours. Do these parents think that they are helping their children by farming out their homework? Do they care if their kid develops intellectually and emotionally? This may be how they move through the world, purchasing a kind of frictionless appearance of a good life. Seems to me that the children who are writing their own papers or studying for their own tests have an advantage here. They are learning to work, to write, to risk, to struggle, to fail, while these over-tutored children are learning to pay someone else to do work for them? How do you gain confidence if your tutor turned in an A paper on The Great Gatsby? If these children actually read Gatsby, they might learn something about the futility of materialism. Aside from overt cheating, there is something generally toxic in the tutoring culture of many elite private schools. There is a vogue for tutors who are paid to boost the grades of otherwise decent students and a frantic push before college applications. Amanda Uri, the owner of Manhattan Private School Advisors, told me that this often backfires. It's a real case of diminishing returns after a point. You trade a B+ for an A, but you wind up with a stressed out, freaked out kid, and that goes on for a lifetime, she said. Some children need tutors, but more than half the tutored children we see absolutely do not. In this relentless push for achievement, the over-tutored kid is by definition never good enough. Parents are sending them the crippling message that they are not capable of doing what they need to do on their own. They can only be accomplished or impressive enough with a paid professional to get them there. One tutor I spoke with has even exhausted overpressured children who have a tutor for every single class. How are they going to make it through life if they need constant handholding just to function as a high school student? It is no small irony that this kind of over-tutoring is creating underprepared children. Somewhere in this repellent situation, there are probably good intentions. There is the very understandable desire to help and nurture and protect your kid. There is the physical reassurance of a human, helpful being at the kitchen table talking things through. But a history class teaches more than history. Students learn to work and struggle and think things through. Kids who believe that they can buy someone to help them with hard things aren't going to develop the resilience and work ethic that they need for true accomplishment beyond school. They may be able to glide through a certain kind of rich person's existence, but they are not equipped for innovation and adaptation and grit. These parents are so panicked about their kids going to Ivy League schools and after that onto banks and hedge funds and prestigious companies that they are neglecting to create kids who can actually function in those places. I hadn't known until recently that some of these children keep their tutors through college. I've even heard of people who keep tutors for help with the job search. When does this end and where does it end? Will the tutor tinker with memos for their jobs? Will the tutor stay up late managing their spreadsheets, write their wedding vows? These rich scions will go through the motions of competent adulthood without ever having picked up the skills. One tutor recalled meeting some of these over-tutored children at college. I know a bunch of these children to have intense drug problems and anxiety, to be some of the most miserable people I know, but ostensibly they will always have this story of being successful and rich, she said. Meanwhile, this kid is a train wreck. And now, why are smart appliances so dumb? Jimmy Hawkins calls himself a home automation hobbyist, but hobbyist isn't underselling it. He's a home automation maniac. Hawkins has over 200 smart devices throughout his Alpharetta, Georgia home. They include run-of-the-mill smart products, locks, light bulbs, a garage door opener, and vacuums, but also weird ones, bidet, mousetrap, toothbrush, and curtain rod. What does he not have? Lots of smart appliances. He and his wife, Jordan Hawkins, purchased their 4,000 square foot home in 2022 and bought a smart microwave with a sliding drawer during a renovation. After a power outage, they never reconnected it to Wi-Fi. Do I really need to get my phone, open an app, hit the open button when I'm literally standing in front of this thing and just push the open button, says Hawkins 40? He really does not. Smart devices like locks, thermostats, and vacuums address a legitimate need, solve a problem, or take over an entire task. But most appliances have whizzed past smart and circled back to dumb. Some offer useful tricks, like preheating your oven remotely and downloading software updates that add cooking features. But why would you want to start your washer via app when you likely just loaded it? You wouldn't. That may be one reason why consumers aren't using their smart appliances as intended. According to a Wall Street Journal report back from January 2023, only about half of the buyers of smart home appliances from two major manufacturers keep them connected to the internet. LG reported that it was less than half in 2022. Whirlpool said more than half, but declined to be more specific. Both companies said consumer concerns over privacy, difficulty connecting and reconnecting devices, and the lack of robust Wi-Fi near appliances caused the low connection rates. Owners of these devices have different explanations. There is, they say, a general disinterest in many Wi-Fi-enabled features, like starting their dryer remotely. Consumers, says Hawkins, also don't want a separate app for appliances made by different companies. An effective smart home hub is still a ways off. Some are getting close, like Home Assistant by Nabucasa, according to Ed De Toenaere, who runs the YouTube channel Smart Home Junkie. But HA is still mostly used by DIY, do-it-yourself home automation hobbyists, De Toenaere said. A universal operating standard called Matter aims to let devices communicate with each other, but until more appliance makers get on board, it's every app for itself. You want to buy high-end appliances that aren't smart, you're kind of out of luck. When interior designer and custom cabinet maker Vince Witteregg had a client who wanted appliances without Wi-Fi, it took Witteregg months to find it. He discovered a few appliances, a Speed Queen washer and dryer set, a Blue Star professional range, and a Wolf steam oven. But he's still on the hunt for a dumb dishwasher. After a surge in 2021, sales of smart home devices plunged, then flattened, and the category of devices that includes smart appliances is not expected to see a meaningful rebound in sales until late this year, according to a study by market intelligence firm IDC. This, says Jitesh Ubrani, a research manager for IDC, is partly due to market saturation for smart home devices of all types, a dramatic slowdown in new home sales and construction, and any economic downturn. Despite a lack of robust consumer interest in smart features, appliance manufacturers continue to embrace them. Data generated by these smart appliances and their apps is fed back to the maker and can be used to determine how customers are using the product, to identify cross-selling opportunities for paid subscription services, and to enable updates and remote diagnostics. Still, hope springs eternal that manufacturers will realize consumers want an appliance that works and lasts longer than 5 years before going obsolete. If you want a dumb appliance, look for a lower tier model in any maker's portfolio of products. If you're committed to owning a high-end dumb appliance and can spend big, shop European, industrial, or commercial grade manufacturers. If the model you want only comes smart, keep in mind that most appliances still work without an internet connection, but some do not. Make sure the features you want work without a connection or without a one-time connection for a download. Lastly, if you want your smart appliances to communicate with each other, look for those that incorporate Matter. More makers are joining the standard, and as smart appliance functionality inevitably, we hope, improves and becomes more useful, being able to consolidate control on a single hub instead of a half dozen apps will make life easier. That, after all, is the point of home appliances. And now, life lessons from Airplane. When I learned of the death of Jim Abrams, who along with Jerry and David Zucker wrote, directed, and produced the comedy film Airplane, 1980, I asked the obvious question, surely you can't be serious. Abraham's special genius, I am serious, and don't call me Shirley, provided the perfect posthumous reply. Abraham spent his career collaborating with the Zucker brothers, his friend since childhood in the Milwaukee suburb of Shorewood. The trio's relentlessly hilarious body of work had a motivation as pure as the jokes themselves were ribald. In an ideological age, they made films with no agenda other than to be funny for the sake of being funny. Just as I salute the late Jim Abrahams over his surviving creative partners, I hail the trio's masterpiece Airplane over their other films as the highest expression of their mirth. Almost every joke lands, but it's much more than that. Seeing the film for the first time in the early 80s opened new vistas to my adolescent eyes. When the adventure parody was released, I was just beginning to accept that soon I would become a man and have to put away childish things. Yet here were three men who were friends since boyhood and had found a way to make a living in Hollywood, and a handsome one, by being very good at being silly. I began to see things in a different light. The behavior that to date had purchased only middle school detention for my friends and me might instead offer a rewarding career path if the skills were honed properly. I filed the vocational thought away and swore I'd revisit the issue if the time came, but it never did. 15 years later, I was a young lawyer quietly participating in a conference call in the corner of my office of my mentor at the time, Chris Giragosian. Upon being surprised by unfortunate news, Mr. Giragosian hit the mute button, looked directly at me, and in a sardonic voice said, "Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit sniffing glue." The scales fell from my eyes. Airplane dialogue didn't have to be retired as a childish thing in a world of adults. It has value as conversational currency to communicate ideas quickly and clearly at work. This forever changed how I approach my job, joyfully, for the better. I am grateful for the laughter-filled life of Jim Abrahams, who taught me that hard work and good cheer are not mutually exclusive. The effect of that invaluable lesson on my life is never over. That brings us to the end of today's articles. I'm Merrick Schneider, and I will be back soon with more articles. Thank you for listening.